Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for being with us this week. On this week's program, we hear from Operations Manager of Optumara Agriculture, Sadie Gerby. She's going to talk about all things hemp, and that'll be an interesting conversation. Stay with us for that. Also, Jamie Campbell-Petty, Executive Director of the Midwest Hemp Council, will come on and talk about some social events and other things going on, including Thirsty Thursday happening this evening. But first, we're going to begin things with Midwest Hemp Council President Justin Swanson. We're going to tackle some administrative details. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm great, Jason. You holding up okay?
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. It's good to be back in the swing of things and talking hemp again.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, Justin, now the reason we've got you on here today, always we like to get the business affairs taken care of first. And we understand the Attorney General is getting involved, sent a letter to some CBD businesses in Indiana looking for some informal meetings. So is this a good thing, Justin, or is this like being called to the principal's office?
Well, yeah, he's probably looking for more information that their office is, you know, and I just like to, not many people understand the Attorney General's role, how they fit into things. Mm-hmm. And although the office is made up mainly of attorneys, really the best way to think about them is kind of law enforcement or cops.
Yeah, you got to be careful, those attorneys.
Yeah,
slick.
You know, my dad's been a public defender for 40 plus years. And, you know, I've seen firsthand what happens when you, you know, what can happen when you talk to law enforcement without an attorney present, whether you've done anything bad or not. You know, words can be twisted and facts can get wrong. So,
okay. So an informal meeting, as we've seen with some, we won't name names, but some, national public figures, an informal meeting is never something you want to take lightly.
Yeah, right. And basically the letter states, hey, you know, we're from the Attorney General's office. We have a powerful tool that we can use to investigate potential violations. It's called the Indiana's Deceptive Consumer Sales Act. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, akin to kind of the Federal Trade Commission's Fraud and Deceptive Act statute. And what it looks like is, you know, they're targeting some companies here that may have some, you know, advertising on their website that might not line up with something, or they think it doesn't line up with something. But the letter's pretty vague, but it basically, again, says they have a powerful tool that we could essentially subpoena you for information. But we're not going to do that this time. We'd just like to have a sit down discussion with you to talk about, you know, your business and how you're operating. So it's something we're keeping a really close eye on, and I really encourage our members, whether you're in Indiana or not, if you do business in Indiana, you get one of these letters from the Attorney General's office, please reach out to us, because we're trying to gauge how in-depth this is going.
So this sounds more like an interrogation than possibly an informal meeting.
I mean, kind of my personal view right now, because I don't have a whole lot of information, is they might be trying to shake some trees to see what comes out.
Mm-hmm. So what would be your advice, your unofficial advice for anybody receiving that letter?
You know, if it were me and my business was, you know, these questions were being asked, with a room full of attorneys, I would want an advocate on my side as well. Mm-hmm. So I'd really encourage, if you do get one of these letters, to seek counsel, before you go in and talk to them.
But you'd also, of course, like these folks to get in touch with you or somebody at the Midwest Hemp Council and let you know that they received the letter and how it how everything rolls for them.
That's right, because we're aware of at least three letters that have been sent. So we're, again, trying to just keep track of it and be as helpful as we can where we can.
Has our Attorney General not been positive with the hemp industry?
You know, I don't think he's a big supporter of cannabis in general. Keep in mind, you know, the Attorney General's office is law enforcement. So, they're, you know, what's on the book is the law, and we're going to enforce the law. Mm-hmm. So no, I think if people remember back in 2017, we had, some chaos in the industry after some legislation passed and CBD products started popping up everywhere. So no, traditionally he's not been, very friendly to the industry. And that's why we're trying to take this, you know, pretty seriously.
And having said that, of course, we all want enforcement to make sure that all the ingredients and everything that are supposed to be in the packages are actually what's in the packages. But again, there can be some sometimes when the government might overstep those bounds. So that's what we need to be careful of.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Jason. Thanks for bringing that up, because it is important that we have quality products and that people are selling products and advertising them in a way that's legal and, you know, contains what it says it contains in the label. So absolutely agree with that. We just want to make sure, to your point, that, you know, small businesses aren't being harassed just because they're in a certain industry.
Gotcha. And also, Justin, we wanted to talk about the DEA interim final rule. That's making some news for you right now.
Yeah. So this is a pretty big bombshell that's been dropped on the industry. And if you've been in the industry for a while, you're pretty used to this. And I'm sure you've had your seatbelt on since you got in the industry. Because it seems to be kind of one thing after another in terms of federal agencies kind of overstepping their bounds. So the DEA released their interim final rule last Thursday, and it was effective upon publication in the Federal Register, and that was actually published last Friday. So this is now in effect. And really the main issue is this really threatens the entire CBD consumer market. Because it basically goes into saying, you know, it's fine if it's below 0.3%, you know, Delta 9 THC, it's coming from the hemp plant, but it can't exceed that 0.3% or it's a Schedule 1 substance. Mm-hmm. And really, to give our listeners, the processors know about this, maybe not everybody does, but there's a term that's been coined, it's called the work in progress hemp extract. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially kind of your crude oil or your beginning stages right after you're done extracting. And that oil, that crude oil, is nowhere close to being below 0.3% because you've concentrated all the cannabinoids into an oil, right?
Okay.
So everything gets higher. And so there's no way processors can abide by this interim final rule without, you know, essentially what the DEA is saying is a controlled substance now is that end product or the middle stage product, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that makes sense. But basically, this is going to put every processor in the country and open themselves up to liability for the DEA to come in and catch them in the middle of processing and saying, oh, that's a Schedule 1 drug. Let's have a quick talk here.
Okay, so how do we avoid that?
So that's a good question. So it's already in effect. There's a comment period that runs until October 20th. And I have been, Midwest Hemp Council has been diligently working with attorneys across the country and other trade groups across the country and how we have a unified response to this.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not something where we want to be out by ourselves on as organization. Our talking points, you know, and the information we're giving out all needs to match up and be uniform to beat this. So the first step is we're going to create an infographic or kind of a guide to help people submit comments to the DEA and tell them what to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
The second aspect of this is probably a legal aspect, and there are talks of challenging this interim final rule based on how these rules are supposed to be adopted. It's called the Administrative Procedures Act, and really all that is hey, this is how when a federal agency promulgates a rule, it has to take certain steps, make sure the public has the time to comment. Make sure it's really a way to help make sure that the agencies don't get out of control. And so there's talks of challenging that in court, which will be interesting. We should have an answer in that next couple weeks. You know, and there's also kind of the public media side. We really need to make sure we frame this because Delta 8 has been a hot product on the market the last couple months.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions about it. And the interim final rule also kind of targets the Delta 8, it fits under this whole conundrum. But we as an industry need to make sure that we're not making it about just Delta 8 or about one cannabinoid and really elevate the conversation to protect the entire consumer CBD market and the processors that are producing oils to make those products.
And when you say we, what can the average listener do out there to help this this along?
So the first point, one is just to submit comments to the DEA. We'll have a member alert go out here shortly, hopefully in the next couple of days, with kind of an infographic and then ways with a link directly to comment and then how to appropriately comment and the points to hit. So that's the number one way we can have an impact, individual businesses and people, is making sure the DEA understands that this is not, you're not just restating law. You've massively pulled the rug out from under, you know, from an industry that's just 6 years old.
And Justin, do you see the regulations going away from being in favor of hemp growers, or I mean, as we move along here, months into this, a couple years into this, do we have the fear that the lawmakers are getting away from where we want to go?
No, it's interesting because the Congress, I think in general, has been a really big advocate for the hemp industry. And it's really the DEA, that the federal agency, that comes in the back end and really screws things up. Mm. They did it with the USDA interim final rule, with you know requiring the labs to be DEA licensed, and you can't touch hot hemp unless you're licensed law enforcement agent. All that stuff is designed to really chill the industry. Mm-hmm. And so I think, to answer your question more directly, no, I think another senator from Colorado just wrote a letter to the USDA. Asking to delay the 18 Farm Bill implementation because of the DEA's restrictions made it almost impossible to operate. So I think you're going to start seeing hopefully some bigger pushback from sitting congressmen and senators on some of these overt actions from the DEA.
And again, when can listeners look for information on how they can carry this out?
So hopefully a couple days. Again, we want to make sure our messaging is right and we're saying the right things. Mm-hmm. And then we'll just look for a member alert that'll go out, and then we can get rolling on terms of making sure the DEA understands how big of an issue this is for the industry.
Great, great. Anything else, Justin?
I think that's it, Jason. There's a lot going on, as always. But again, if you've been in the industry for a while, you've probably had your seatbelt on for a while. So this is really kind of another day and an opportunity for the industry to come together on a national front and work together to beat the DEA once again.
Well, you know, never be surprised, but always be prepared.
Absolutely.
There we go. Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin, as always, much appreciated.
Thanks, right. Jason.
And as we continue on with the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, we want to turn our attention to Jamie Campbell Petty. Jamie is also co-founder of the Midwest Hemp Council. Jamie, how you doing?
Good, Jason. How are you today?
Doing fantastic. Great to have you back on the program after our little hiatus there. Always good to hear your lovely voice.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad that we're all kind of gearing back up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and I know you're running, as always, you've got all kinds of things going on here. Never a dull moment. Let's get to it. The reason you're on here today is to talk about some of the cool stuff coming up with the Midwest Hemp Council. So I'm just going to kind of throw it over to you and let you run down the agenda and tell us what's going on.
Oh, Jason, thanks a lot. Yes. So everyone, even today is a busy day. And a really good way to keep track of things now is on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, we have a full calendar. We're still getting it populated, but I think if you go to it, even today is a great example, you're going to see a lot of information. I'll be participating in the Farm Journal Days with U.S. Hemp Growers and talking about Midwest Hemp Council. That's a virtual field day. That information's on the calendar for today and tomorrow. And then today, we're excited to have our second return of the podcast and have some information on cannabinoid testing, harvesting, and also Justin Swanson's going to talk a little bit about this new DEA issue. Mm-hmm. Every Thursday, Thursday's a really popular, busy day for us in the Midwest, but every Thursday, the iHemp Michigan team has an iHemp webinar. You'll have that information on the calendar. And as well, Midwest Hemp Council's podcast, of course, launches, which is great because you can listen to that at your convenience. But we'd love to have you. We really like to have people listening in to Jason. Jason, you do such a great job, and we like to get feedback as soon as possible to help us prepare for the next week.
Well, thank you so much. And it is one of the good things about recording this is that, there's so much going on Thursdays, and we want to encourage everybody to try to tune in to the live events first. That's you want to get tuned in to the live events. And then, of course, the podcast is there. You can take it in your car, anything like that. It's not as critical as the other ones, but we want to encourage everybody, the Thirsty Thursdays, that sort of thing. Make sure that, you know, again, those are live. Those are, and it's neat. It's just a different experience to be involved in the live part of it as opposed to watching it later.
Exactly. And this evening, as well as every Thursday evening. Our Thirsty Thursday has returned again. This is our second week. Today is going to be really member-focused. We aren't going to have any guests. Austin Rodas, Brandy Barrett, Rachel Wheeler, myself, basically, you know, the administrative membership team will give some updates on what has occurred over the last few months with our new website, the events that are coming. But what we want to do is have the members interact and give us feedback on what we can do better or new ideas, things to propel us. Our membership is increasing significantly, and we want to make sure that we're representing our members and providing them what they need, encouraging people to participate in the committee. So please try and join us 6 o'clock for just literally one of our networking sessions that we would normally do in person. But we've really had fun on these, asking people to grab their favorite beverage and sit down and talk to us. So that's tomorrow at 6, and that information is on our calendar. For our members, you will get the login information in your inbox. And Jason, our first in-person networking event is coming up quickly on September 1st. Really excited. We will be complying with all COVID regulations, but you will be able to find the registration on our Facebook page or on our website. But we're grateful to MyCBD Edibles for sponsoring this event. It will be held at Lauren and Marty Mexican Grill in Carmel from 7 to 10 p.m. with CBD-infused products and also hemp-infused food items. So please go check it out.
And again, that's on September 1st, and obviously people can get more information from the website on that, I assume.
Yes, they can, and the registration link will be there. Mm-hmm. And then I encourage everyone to tune into the website, make sure and sign up for our newsletter. There's, when you go to the website at MidwestHempCouncil.com, you can sign up for a newsletter, and that will keep you in the loop for our members, for Thirsty Thursday, the Midwest Hemp Policy Call. Make sure that your profile is set up on our website and make sure that you are receiving all of our member email alerts. They'll keep you in the loop. So lots of ways to participate, lots of ways to get involved, and look forward to seeing everyone tonight on Thirsty Thursday as well as next Tuesday in person in Carmel.
Excellent. Well, Jamie, we do appreciate it, and I assume we may be hearing from you again next week, but if not, we'll see you out there next Thursday.
Great. Thanks for your time, Jason.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Okay, as we continue on with the program, we're speaking with Sadie Gerby. Sadie is the operations manager for Optimera Agriculture. Sadie, how you doing today, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Jason. I'm doing well.
Well, great. Now, let's start from the beginning here. We'll get a little information about you, but first, tell us what Optimera Agriculture is all about and what you folks do there.
Yeah, so Optimera is a wholesale greenhouse. We also do ornamentals here. We're the world's largest African violet producer. But in 2015, we became licensed for hemp production. So we specialize in hemp seedlings and hemp clones for the wholesale market. We mostly sell to outdoor farmers.
Okay. Why that determination? Why outdoor farmers as opposed to greenhouse farmers?
We do greenhouse as well. And actually, this winter, we're going to be doing a pretty good indoor cloning program for basically indoor growers. Mm-hmm. But mostly, it's just scale. We typically do pretty large grows at one time, and most of the licensed hemp growers in Tennessee and surrounding areas just happen to be outdoor.
Okay, gotcha. Now, as operations manager for Optimera Agriculture, what is your role and how long have you been with them?
Well, I've only actually been with this company for 1 year. And my role here, and it kind of changes from day to day, but for example, this year, I did a lot of customer interactions, setting up the sales, talking with customers on the phone, and then really just overseeing a lot of the seedling and the cloning programs. Usually half the day is in the office and half the day is out in the field or watering plants.
Well, when we talk about the hemp industry, it's almost like dog years. 1 year is the equivalent because the industry is so young and new. So when you say only a year, well, that's an eternity in the hemp industry. But Sadie, tell us, was that your introduction into hemp, or were you interested in it before that? How did that arrangement come about that you started with Optumera Agriculture?
That was my introduction to hemp. I'm pretty new to the field, but I've just been in ornamental growing in greenhouses for over a decade and really wanted to get into wholesale. Mm-hmm. I heard about Optumera because of their ornamental program, but then when I came to interview, I learned about their amazing hemp program, and it was just kind of too good to pass up, and really just was excited about the new opportunity.
Now, Sadie, you wrote an article with Greg Krueger called Here Comes Harvest, and this was for the Cannabinoid Committee. Tell us, first of all, the Cannabinoid Committee, tell us what that's all about, and then why this article and what this article covered and what was the purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Cannabinoid Committee is a small group of people. We have monthly meetings, and basically our mission is to get some educational pieces out there to the members of this group and to be able to have really a stockpile of educational resources for all kinds of aspects of cannabinoids. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, there are farming aspects in hemp, there are pharmaceutical aspects, medical aspects, and the mission right now is to try and compile some of these resources together. We have a lot of diverse people on this committee, and everybody is kind of coming at it from a different angle.
Now, the article that you wrote, tell us about that and what was the point. Who is that article directed to?
Yeah, this one is mostly directed towards growers. So as harvest is coming, it was sort of what kind of questions should growers be asking? I think that's sometimes the hard part for people that are new to this industry, is they don't even know what kinds of things they should be questioning. Mm-hmm. For example, one of the first questions we had is, who on my team is dedicated to looking for male plants in our crop? And a lot of farmers don't even realize when to start looking for male plants, what exactly they look like, and what is their feminization rate on the seed that they may have put out? And that's a pretty vital aspect to growing this plant. You don't want those female plants to be pollinated. And just getting this kind of relatively basic, but it can be new information for people who don't know the industry, mm-hmm. getting that out there is pretty important.
So when should they start testing for their plants and looking for the males?
As soon as you start to see signs of flower, that's when you can really start to look for males. It can depend. So really, we just say as early as possible. As soon as you start seeing the white pistils of the female flowers coming out, mm-hmm. that's when you got to be looking for those male pollen sacs. And they look very different on the plant. And we, try to provide photos as much as possible. You can always reach out to the people, or farmers can always reach out to the people who they got their plants from. They should be able to have resources for those farmers to say, hey, here's some good quality pictures. Hey, here's how many males you might be able to expect in your field, or, things like that. So really as early as possible and as often as possible, mm-hmm. just because you walk your field one or two times and look at every plant does not mean that, you've seen if there are any males or not. You need to walk it consistently, multiple times a week, I would say, throughout the flower process.
And is this something that it sounds like it's not just as simple as walking along, looking down, oh, there's a male, there's a female. It sounds like
it's
a very detailed process or something that, now would that be, okay, so this question that you have on the article, who on my team is dedicated to looking for males in our crops, it sounds like it's something that is almost specialized, like a person has to have some sort of, obviously some sort of training or understanding.
They need to know what they're looking for. They need to be able, whoever is dedicated to doing that needs to be able to look at a plant and say, this is what a female looks like, and or this is what a male looks like. And, and they need to know that definitively, and they need to be able, it should be probably only one or two people, so you have consistency and they know, like, hey, I've checked this row thoroughly four times and I feel good about this, or something like that. So yeah, it's not really any special training as far as just being able to tell the difference between the male pollen sacs and the female flowers.
And the article goes on to ask and answer the questions, you know, when should I harvest? What are some other considerations with regard to harvest timing? Are you finding that a lot of the farmers out there are putting their crops in the ground without knowing this information first, or kind of like a learn as they go situation, or are most of them getting this information before they attempt?
It depends. I have seen all of them in my year of working with farmers. You have people that are starting on all different walks. So it definitely depends, but you know, a lot of it depends on your latitude, which is another kind of issue. We sell to people, in many, many different states, as far north as Indiana, as far south as, you know, places in Alabama. And that harvest window is really going to depend on your sunlight lengths and where you're growing. So that's a consideration that I think a lot of farmers don't realize. We typically put out, you know, recommendations for people in Tennessee, because that's where the majority of our customers are. But somebody in Alabama may need to harvest sooner rather than somebody in Indiana who's going to need to harvest a little bit later because they're having those longer days.
Mm-hmm. And you also talk about the drying space that is needed. What about the drying time? When you talk about space, is it a matter of just hanging the plant and therefore it only takes up that amount of space? Or does there need to be some sort of social distancing between the plants to let air flow or something like that? What's involved in that?
Airflow is important. If you're hang drying, you don't want to cram all your plants up together, so you're just getting the big, you know, kind of smothered mess. You definitely need to have some space in there to allow for good airflow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you need to put them 6 feet apart, but
mask required. Okay, good. Not yet anyway,
but,
right?
Yeah, not yet. But you know, that can depend too, because some people will use mechanized dryers, machines. So, you know, that's a totally different process as well. And trying to get farmers to think about, where am I drying? How am I drying? How much space is this going to take up in my barn? How many rows high can I go? Am I stacking it? Can I only put one row in my barn? Can I put four rows high? You know, these are the kind of questions that they should be trying to think about before the day that they harvest.
And I would imagine if you have the plants too close together or on top of each other, of course, things like mold, mildew, things like that would enter the picture.
Definitely.
So how long, for a layman like me, how long does the drying process take, and how much time between when the drying process starts till they actually get out to get it out of there to get processed? And how long can they keep it? And we know some farmers have had theirs for quite a while. I assume some still have some from last year. So is there a shelf life for that?
Yeah, absolutely. These are really good questions, and it's hard to give a specific answer because it depends on their drying process. It depends on how low the humidity is going in the evenings. You know, if it rains, if you have your hemp hanging in a barn and it rains every single day for a week, you're going to still have really, really high humidity in that barn. So it's going to take much longer to dry than if you have it in an enclosed box with dehumidifiers and dehumidifying air conditioners. Mm-hmm. So the time can really depend, but what you're shooting for in as far as moisture level in a plant is 10% moisture level or less. And if you can get to that 10% or less in your flower, then you can store that very effectively for a long time. There are farmers who still have their 2019 crop and have been able to keep that at a good 10% moisture level. And then they're also keeping it cool around, you know, 60, 65 degrees. And that hemp can last very long. That can have a very good shelf life. There are farmers who are selling their 2019 crop now and getting a good price for it because it's still viable and it's upheld very well.
And I bet they're very relieved.
Yes, I think so. I think a lot of them are.
All right, we're speaking with Sadie Gerby. Sadie is the operations manager with Optumera Agriculture, also on the cannabinoid committee. Okay, Sadie, so the article that you did with Greg, Here Comes Harvest, this does ask and answer a lot of the questions, and we know this will be made available to the public. We ask folks to go to the Midwest Hemp Council website and check that out, and there's more information coming on Thirsty Thursday. That's another event that the Midwest Hemp Council does, where people can access this article, find out where they can get it, and all that good stuff. But Sadie, let's talk about the cloning and seedlings, things like that, that your company offers. A lot of people out there, when they look at jumping into growing hemp, of course, one of the first things they're gonna have to ask themselves, and the question they're gonna have to get answered is, you know, do we use seeds or do we use clones? Now, you offer both, is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very good question, and we go through this with farmers all the time. A lot of it just depends on their grow setup. There are advantages to both seedlings and clones. For example, the seedlings are unique in that they have a very long taproot. Those can be very advantageous in the field. They will not need as much water throughout the season. If your field is not irrigated, that would probably be a better option for you, because those seedlings will send that taproot down, be able to find their own water, and you'll have a very successful harvest with those. Now, clones can do well without irrigation also, but if you have irrigation, the clones can be good for that too. People enjoy clones because the genetics are very consistent. You're going to be less likely to have males in those. And in addition, the clones do very well for indoor grows as well. This winter, we're doing indoor clones for indoor grows. And those are great in pots because they're not going to try and send that taproot all the way down. They're going to have much more fibrous, broad-spreading roots, which are much more advantageous in pots. Now, the seedlings we do, we use Oregon CBD seeds, and we germinate those here. Mm-hmm. And they have an excellent feminization rate. It's typically one male out of every 4,000 plants. And we've been growing these seeds for several years, and we have found that ratio to be accurate, which is absolutely wonderful. It's probably the best feminization rate you'll find in the industry at this point. So we're really happy to use their genetics. They're very consistent, and they offer a really good product.
And Sadie, where can folks get more information about Optumera Agriculture?
Yeah, you can go to our website. It's hemp.optumera.com. You can always email me as well. My email is sadie@optumera.com, or I think there's an email address on the website too, but they all just come to me. So you can definitely reach out that way. We have an Instagram as well. It's @OptumaraAgriculture. You can follow us on there and kind of keep track of what we're doing.
Well, Sadie, for this second season in Indiana, maybe not as quite hectic as the first season, but of course with COVID and everything else going on and a strange year that it's been, there maybe hasn't been as much focus on what's going on. But up to this point, how would you view 2020 as far as what you're seeing in the fields, the products that are out there, the quality coming up? What are you seeing out there, and what's your outlook for 2020 here on our production?
Well, I've been seeing good things. It's great that we get to go do a lot of farm visits here. We try to visit all of our customers, or most of our customers, and check it out, answer questions. And the people that we've sold to have very successful grows, and that's encouraging to see. I think we're going to have a good market. Everybody, I think, is a little more optimistic, which is great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we also, I think, are seeing a lot of repeat customers this year. People who did do well in 2019 are coming back to do it again, which is really great to see. So we have more experience, I think, this year than before.
Well, of course, there's two things the growers have to look at, and that is the success of their growing season. But then once that stress is over with, then they have to look at the sale of the product. So with mm-hmm. that, are they looking pretty positive this year? Does everybody, do they think they're going to get their crop sold?
I think it doesn't hurt to be optimistic. The people I talk to, I always advise them, you know, before you plant hemp, try and know how you're going to sell it, because that is really the key to this industry. You know, this is not corn. This is not tobacco. You got to make sure that you know where it's going before you get your plants in the ground.
Compared to this time last year, the mindset of the farmers, everything was relatively new. Like you said, you've got a lot of folks coming back. A lot of your clients, for instance, grew last year. Now they're growing again, probably a little more comfortable. But what is the mindset that you see out there? As far as are they grasping what's going on? Do the farmers believe that now they have a, although it's always a learning process, do they feel like they're getting a grasp of what's happening?
I do. I think we're getting there. I think it's a lot of collaboration, and I'm happy to see that a lot of our farmers do reach out to us very frequently. I get emails, I get calls, even just questions. Farmers will send me a picture of a plant and say, "Sadie, is this a male?" Or, you know, just what's going on with this? And just send little things here and there. And a lot of the times it's nothing. It's like, nope, you're good to go. But, you know, having that open communication, I think, is really vital to this industry. And I'm happy that it's becoming more collaborative.
Once again, Sadie Gerby, Operations Manager for Optimara Agriculture. Sadie, is there anything else we need to add into the conversation?
I don't think so, Jason. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we appreciate everything you're doing for the hemp industry out there, and just one of the folks making it better for everybody. So we do appreciate that.
Well, thanks so much, Jason. It was wonderful to talk to you.
All right. And we hope to get you back on the program soon.
Okay, sounds good.
And that's going to do it for this week's program. The Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes, McKinney & Evans. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, please go to the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and find out how you can get involved, volunteer, and become a member. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.